Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, your host from Marknology here on the Startup Hustle. My guest today on the show, Zane Callister. A little description and background on Zane. He's a Kansas City native and the creator of Young Collective. Zane is no stranger to songwriting. His music allows the listeners to escape the realistic confines of our world and be taken to other places without restrictions, walls, and gravity. Each of his tracks exists to put the listener in a place of excitement, exploration, adventure, and clarity. Beautifully written. And for anyone else listening, me and Zane go way back. I think we're going to have fun on today's show, just talking about some of the past and how I see some of our past, like, you know, creeping into what I'm doing today and its part in what we're doing today and the kind of thinking. And right before the tape started rolling, we were talking about coming into his studio and talking to some of his, you know, his artists, his technicians on ways that they can get systemized and scale their business. So we're going to have a lot of fun today talking about a lot of stuff. Zane, before I let you take over, I just want to give a shout out quickly to our sponsor for today's show. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by GEWKC, or for anyone knows, Global Entrepreneur Week, taking place here in Kansas City, November 16th through the 20th. So if you're in Kansas City, mark that on your calendars. You're gonna wanna go there, go learn about GEW, register for all the things happening. 2 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, actually. It's time flies. 3 years ago, I went to Global Entrepreneur Week. I saw some of the brands I was even working with speaking there and was like, you know, I challenged myself, like, next year I'm going to speak at Global Entrepreneur Week because I think I could give a lot back to Kansas City. And I used to get even scared talking up there. But 3 years ago, I went. 2 years ago, I spoke. And I've been involved with Global Entrepreneur Week ever since, talking about storytelling, branding, e-commerce. If you guys are wanting to be entrepreneurs, this is honestly the best, I think the best free event going on each year. You get, whether it's the speakers or it's the other people there attending, it's just really great, and it's a positive environment. That being said, I love Global Entrepreneur Week. Zane, say hello to everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome to the show.
Dude, thanks for having me on. I love when you even, dude, my memory is jogged so hard when you're like, we've known each other for a minute.
It's been a minute. You know, I tried out for Our Last Chance, which was in 07. In 07. So I don't think... you still with me?
It's been... Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. It's been 07. I tried out for... Our Last Chance off of Craigslist, a Craigslist ad when I moved from Hawaii.
What a gift.
Yeah, we've been connected ever since. Zane was in it's kind of like the Amazon space in regards to, we were like competitive bands, sure.
Sure.
You know, trying to get shows and budgets and opportunities, but at the same time, colleagues. you know, and friends.
Absolutely.
In the Amazon space, it's been a lot like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
There's competitors, but with an abundance mindset, there's so much to go around.
That's amazing.
A lot of our competitors as being colleagues, and you know, we just share and talk about ways to win. And
absolutely, scarcity mentality here. So,
when did you? Let's go back down memory lane a little bit. So, did you join a band right out of high school?
So, I got the opportunity to play with some bands in high school. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. We're just kids. Like, never played. My first show was my freshman year of college. So I was a little bit of a late bloomer. Like, I would play at stuff. Like, our school would always, like, have me, like, play guitar at, like, you know, assemblies and stuff like that. I played the national anthem at, like, a football game. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. But I didn't start actually playing live till really my freshman year of college.
Okay.
So that would have been 2007. Yeah, it's like you met me right when this whole thing started. It's just crazy. So
we were in Christian hardcore bands, for anyone listening. We were really cool.
You thought this was meta. It gets more meta.
It was like the best times of my life, honestly. Like, it was tough because we were so poor.
Sure.
You know, we were so poor. I think like at one point, 6 or 8 people living in a house. Right. You know, we roughed it.
Yeah.
But it taught me so, so much.
Okay, wouldn't trade it.
So freshman year, you're playing music. How long did you play, tour, like, with that project or those projects, before you kind of put that down?
So I had jumped around a bunch of local type bands, and, like, I think I always kind of knew I wanted to do something on a more grand scale. For me then, you know, it's like this with any project or any business, like, scaling, right? Like, for me, it was, okay, I want to play shows. Okay, now I'm playing shows. Okay, I want to play shows an hour away. Okay, did that. And then it's like, what if I, like, didn't come home after my show and, like, I went to another show, you know, or something like that. And so,
the tour dragon.
Yeah, and then you're touring, you know. And then I think, like, the second I realized I didn't need, like, a label's permission to do that, I was like, I just need people who are willing to let me do that with them or to do for them to do it with me. So that kept me busy. I was in and out of college because, I went to Iowa State because right out of high school, because I was like, man, I'm never going to make a living playing music. So I should go to school for music business. And I had a friend that went there for music business, which is so weird. It's Iowa. But, like, I went there, dropped out after first semester, dude. It was not for me. And then I came back to St. Joseph, Missouri, got in the music program, dropped out. But that was the tour because those bands finally started, you know, we did the hour away, we did the 2 hours away. Next thing you know, we're gone for 5 days. And next thing you know, I mean, like, the longest I was gone, like, it was like 65 days. And it was just like, we had no money. We didn't.
Brutal.
It was just, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, it was brutal. It's much like launching a business, except your product is something only like 0.00001% of people give a crap about. It's like Christian hardcore music, you know, like, your listeners are like, that's a thing, you know, like,
how's that Christian? They're screaming.
You know, their tattoos. No, it's like, I didn't even have tattoos back then. So it's like,
we were real edgy.
We were edgy. So yeah. So then that led to, eventually, like, doing more, like, solidified tours, sponsored tours and things like that. And then I'd stopped doing that. I was just talking to my wife about this. I think I was 23 years old when I was done. I'm 32. So
yeah,
it's been a minute. I did a few spot dates, like, after I was done, because I'd met enough people in the industry that I would get a phone call. Hey, we're doing 6 days in the Pacific Northwest. Can you learn, you know, 16 songs? And so, right, I did that.
Ridiculous.
For me,
but... don't get paid nearly enough to learn 16.
Oh no, dude. Yeah. The last band I did that for was like $125 a day.
Yeah. That's not a lot. That's a night shift at Red Robin.
Yeah, dude. So that was kind of that chapter of my life, but it's like you said, I mean, I learned so much. And then, like, being in the industry still, if, like, a kid comes through my door and wants to talk about production, the second that they say they've toured, my ears are perked up. I'm a little bit like, you know, a few things because you did this thing that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
So that's how I feel about entrepreneurship in general.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's, and if I see someone get to a certain stage of that, I understand what they've been through, even if it's a different yes. channel or it's a different business or it's a different mm-hmm. look, I know mm-hmm. that they've ate some dirt.
Sure. It's a little bit like, I don't know if you like watch much football or whatever, go Chiefs, but like, it's a little bit like when you find like a running back that'll play hurt. They're like all the more scary, because that's how I feel about guys that travel in bands. Cause you're like, not only are you cool to be broke, like it just doesn't scare you. You're not right. going to quit. You're not like, you're not afraid of any of the things that like the way of the world says.
Being uncomfortable.
Being uncomfortable. Yeah, right. exactly. So.
And for me, it was, I was going to school too, you know, for computer science, security mm-hmm. and networking. It was my backup plan for when I sure. wanted to get married and didn't want to be poor. And, you know, we were doing it. We were all in though. I mean,
yeah,
as far
you
as
guys were.
School and jobs and work. And I wouldn't say that I was, I knew I wanted to create and I wanted the freedom that mm-hmm. music could give, like the mm-hmm. creative freedom. And I didn't know what kind of creator I was at that time. I'm someone that has like a vision, but I need an artist to help me bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
I can envision it in my mind, but I'm not yeah. really the only creator. I'm a yeah. kind of this, you know? And, so I was learning that. And I was getting that geographical freedom of being able to express through the music and be able to travel, or at least that became what I wanted.
Sure.
And then just realized that without financial freedom, I wasn't mm-hmm. really free.
Sure.
It was like kind of part-time. And then I also realized that I hated having a label or needing a label or someone like that to say, hey, you're cool.
Wow.
I didn't like that. I hated that.
Yeah.
And, I've already... You know my background growing up overseas and church, sure. you know, all those things. I'm just like, I don't need someone to validate me.
No.
I'm like, if it's just business, once you get good enough at it and you start seeing it, you know, we toured with some Tooth and Nails and
sure.
not that big, but big enough to see them doing it for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Careers and talking to them. And for me, it was just really enlightening. There wasn't Spotify at that time, right? So it
sure.
was, you really had to tour to be heard abroad or needed a label to be
totally.
Able to move on. And I guess I was just like, look, if it's business at the end of the day, I think I'm going to choose a business that makes more money.
Yeah, sure.
And I can have all the geographical freedom in the world I want. If I can't mm-hmm. afford to, one, do those things in those places that actually make
yeah.
those places worthwhile,
yeah.
or I can't help anyone else.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Like, if you don't have money, cool, you can be like able to eat dirt, all those things, but it's kind of selfish, because
sure.
that's what I came to realize, is that not caring about money, I just had to change my relationship with it.
Yeah.
Because not caring about money was fine for me, but if anyone asked me for help outside of like helping them move with my bare hands, I couldn't mm-hmm. give them $20.
I know.
Not really, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, that was like, I mean, it was around the same time. I think you're a little bit younger than me and we're in it a little bit longer.
Sure.
Let's talk about, so for anyone listening, like, I think that was my first business. I was learning how to create products. I was learning how Absolutely. To sell our business. I was learning how
yeah.
to create simple business models, you know, learning marketing and salesmanship for
yeah.
sure, because mixed that with my degree, which was very technical. So like, where did I learn at least kind of how to create some products and do things
yeah.
like that? That was kind of the early days. After mm-hmm. the band ends, or you like get out of that,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to understand the transition to what you're doing now and
yeah.
kind of walk people through that.
Yeah. It's so funny. I feel like anyone who's kind of like pursuing this bizarre thing that we're doing, working for ourselves, they're all kind of have the same thing. It's just like you have that dream and it's like a seed that it's got to go in the ground and it's got to die.
Mm-hmm.
And people say that, but like, I, you know, like I said, I toured till I was like 23, 20, 24 was the last tour I did. And I was like you, man, I think, I don't know that money motivator necessarily. Money's funny. It's like, I'm not motivated by having it. Money's like a video game to me. It's kind of stupid, to be completely honest. Like, Here's how I could sum it up, actually. I know I'm going down a bit of a rabbit trail, and I apologize.
Do it.
I sat with this guy who was like, you know, bringing in $16, $20 million a year in commercial real estate. And I'm like a creative. Like, I love hearing how you talked about how you hadn't found your create. You knew you were creative, but you didn't know how. But then you started realizing you're an executive producer. In my industry, you go, we need that bass player. We need that singer. We need this studio. And I think we need it for 6 weeks straight.
Like that's a curator, a team.
Dude, yeah. Yeah. You're going, I don't need to sing on the record, but I know she does. Like, you know what I mean? Like, every industry needs those people. And you look on any big record and it's like executively produced by, and like, you're never going to hear their voice or their guitar playing on the record, but it takes so much. You're a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have the slowest 40 as a head coach because you're 55 years old. You know what to do with this player and this player and this player. It's awesome. It's beautiful. You're really an orchestra conductor at the end of the day. And I think that's awesome. I heard this guy speak on, we had like this awesome one-on-one opportunity and told him a little bit about what I was doing. And I was, at this point, I would have been 2 years into my now 6.5 year journey of working for myself full time. And he said that he has a friend who is the CEO of some large company in Australia. And he said, Andrew, how do you wake up every day knowing, like, you know, you don't know how much money you're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he sat there for a second. He looked at his friend and he said, how do you get up every day knowing that's all you're going to make? Keep in mind, the guy he's talking to is making $1 million a year. Like, and I resonated with that so much because it was actually like a generosity, like, seminar I was at. So this guy's known for writing $1 million checks to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wouldn't we all want to be that guy, right? Like,
but if you don't care about money, you can never give away $1 million.
Exactly. You have to know how to think about money. And you said it really well, and I'm sure we'll talk a little more about it. But like, yeah, when he said that, I was like, that's me. Because that segues nicely into, I'd stopped touring. I mean, my dream was to like play guitar in heavy bands and make $35,000 a year. And my wife is going to literally kick me for saying this, but like, I tell people all the time, if that dream came true, we like couldn't be married. Like, yeah, we couldn't have my daughter. I don't want your listeners hearing that saying, I don't want them to hear me say $35,000 is not an honorable wage, that it's not an amount of money that kids can be fed. I don't believe that 1,000%. But like, I'm in an industry that, like, if I want your vocal to sound good, I need $1,000 mic, $1,000 preamp, $6,000 computer. Like, it would never work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could definitely make $35,000 and absolutely make it work, as long as you're probably not the boss, you know? So I do want to clarify, I don't want anybody being discouraged by that, but like, thankfully that's not what happened, because mm-hmm. I do want to grow a business. I do want to pay people out and stuff like that. So I quit touring. I get a job at a software company, which was awesome. I made $14 an hour. It was like the most I'd ever made in my life. I think I made like $23,000 that year. It was wild. I bought like a pair of Baldwin jeans with it. It was great. Like, you know, like, I just was like, I'm doing it. I literally remember going to Banana Republic and buying like 4 button up shirts, and I got glasses. I was like, I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to do the part.
The guy.
Dude, I wanted to be the guy. I wanted to be the part. I wanted to be taken seriously, because we had just come from this industry where like, you were taken seriously by like the van you pulled up in, mm-hmm. and how your amp looked. And I was like, well, surely this industry's got to be the same way.
No one would think that music, and because it's evolved, it's Spotify and YouTube and those kind of things have made those individual artists and those digital artists more prevalent now, right? And
that's more attainable.
But back then it was, you know, you're going, showing up to do a label showcase and they're saying, I don't like your look.
Oh, it's insane. It's literally insane. Hey, man, you're a drummer. His hair looks kind of weird. And
his teeth are kind of jacked up. Like,
you're like, what? But he's insane. But yeah, I don't know. So I did that. And then I had a really amazing of a guy named Kyle. You probably remember Kyle. I don't know. Did you ever meet Kyle?
His name.
He was like a serial entrepreneur. He was at a church we were at. But like, he basically looked at me and was like, you have a future in music. And I was like, there's no way. He said, I make all these videos for all these brands, and there's music in the background of every single one of them. I was like, okay. He's like, I think you could write records and people would use them in film and television. And I was like, I could never do that. Fast forward, that's literally what I do. But like, he believed in me.
This is the part of your story I haven't heard. So
sure. Oh, that's cool.
Don't skip over the details.
Oh, I won't. Yeah, I won't. And so anyway, yeah, it's like he told me, you know, I'm working at the software company. I get asked by several friends to write music for their weddings, which was really an amazing opportunity. You know, I went from heavy music to writing music for people to walk down the aisle to. And I've always had like a pretty soft spot for like, you know, cinematic music or ambient music, like the really Seagross pretty stuff or whatever. And so anyway, I did that for their weddings and I compiled this catalog of songs, put it on this website where you could like donate money for, you know, to buy it. It's called Noise Trade. It's probably still a company, but like, I remember I would make like $4 a quarter, you know, like I was making no money. People were just donating. But the amazing thing was there weren't a lot of instrumental artists, and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And so on the charts, I was always the number one artist. So it was like, before we started the podcast, we were talking about perception a little bit and like, okay, so I had only made $4 a quarter, but no one knew that. They just saw if I wanted to find a new instrumental artist, the number one artist every time was this young collective, you know, it's like, and I was really grateful for that, that not a lot of people were trying to write instrumental music. Now it's a massive genre. Like I'm fortunate and blessed to have gotten in on it before it just like became this thing that's on every Lexus ad and every Zales ad and, you know, and just like that kind of stuff. So anyway, at this point I'm at the software company. And I actually went back to school for music. I wanted to finish my degree. I talk to my wife all the time about this. I think I was supposed to do it. And I don't fully know why. I think maybe it was a God thing, who knows, but I didn't learn anything. I just wasn't learning in school. And I'm sure you have thoughts on this too, but like I was already doing it. Everything that they were teaching me, I was already doing. I'm not here saying I was better than my teachers. I just like, they were teaching as if I had known nothing. Right. Knew nothing. So I'm paying like, you know, $25,000 a year. And I knew the things they were teaching me because the education was for someone who had never done it.
Yeah, it's tailored that way.
And so I end up scoring a documentary that was released nationally my freshman year of college. And the school was like, well, what do we do with that? Like, I was like, I don't know. And so from that point on, I stopped caring about school. I graduated, I got my degree, but fast forward, some company found my stuff on Noise Trade. They end up signing me to a 2-year agreement to manage my catalog for film and television. Ended up being a terrible deal. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. I was like this close to being in numerous lawsuits. It was really bad. I didn't know though, because I was so green. I just didn't read over contracts. I didn't do anything.
Not knowing is honestly a huge advantage. I listen to a lot of podcasts and owner after owner after owner after owner are like, not knowing kind of makes you fearless in some ways.
That's
like,
that's amazing.
Because if you knew about it, you wouldn't do it.
Oh yeah. You don't need permission when you don't know. Exactly. Like River doesn't know like any, my daughter, sorry, you guys don't know who River is. My daughter's name is River and she's 18 months old. She has no concept of what she can and can't do. It's actually really inspiring. Because she walks around our house like she pays the bills. And like she has no concept of any of that. And she's fearless because of it. And I kind of love that. So, so anyway, end up doing that. Thank goodness. I end up getting signed to this company, MusicBed, who I've been with, you know, for 5-6 years now. And I've been with them ever since. They end up signing me. They're extremely legitimate. They're everywhere. They kind of are like, they're kind of the pace car for licensing in the United States and honestly, probably the world. But if you want reference, like it's musicbed.com, but they're an amazing company. They help a lot of people and yeah, their catalog's just crazy. But I've got several projects with them now that I've worked on. I have a project.
Sorry, you broke up a little bit there.
No, but I was just saying MusicBed, I mean, they're awesome. And that project Utah that I have, it's on Spotify and all that stuff. That's like more of a pop project, but like they manage that whole catalog. And I got an email today that I have like a call with Lexus next week about that project. So it's like, you know what I mean? They are amazing. They take such good care of me and they're really generous too, like with some of the, you know, projects I travel for and things like that. But so that's,
so
yeah.
Can we pause right there for a second?
Sure.
So, I just think this is really interesting because I know a lot of people that are very passionate about music, want a career in music, try to be artists, whether it's hip hop or instrumental or metal or whatever, and rarely ever find a career besides being a teacher or something like that that's paying them to do that. So when you say that you signed with a company, is that like signing with a label? Is that like hiring a sales force? Is that a manager? Are you still a business owner?
Yeah. So they are, you know, you do all of the, you're like the Amazon guru for, I remember when your business had like a headband company and who was the other one you had just signed? I can't remember. You probably saw them today, but like, they don't know how to, they know how to make headbands. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know how to do Amazon. So I know how to make great records and they know how to get it into the hands of music supervisors and ad agencies.
So they do your marketing, your PR, all that.
Some kind of. They do in-house marketing for what they're doing within MusicBed, but like all of my graphic design, all of my website, I mean, they're not in charge of any of that.
Okay.
So they're strictly doing sync licensing. And so I guess it's a good time. So sync licensing is anytime an existing piece of music is then synced to film work. So if you're watching an ad on TV and there's underlining music, there's a chance it's either an original score, spec work, or it's a sync. So if tomorrow you hear a Kanye track on an Adidas ad, that's a sync. He didn't write it for the ad. He wrote the track. Adidas then goes, hey, we're going to license this. We're going to license it. And so
a spec work is where someone writes it for that ad.
Yeah. So I just did a piece. It was really cool called Portrait of a Black Man. It was a Vimeo staff pick for like a month. Morgan Cooper, who's from Kansas City, he's a great director, awesome guy. I scored that. That would be spec work. So I did the original composition and, you know, there's no music. They send me the film. They send me the frames. They send me the SMPTE time code, all locked, pictures all locked, and I watch it. And then I essentially go, okay, this is the feeling that I'm feeling when I'm watching it. And then I score it or compose music, original music for it. And so,
you know, it's really, I don't know if you know this part about my story either, but similar to you, you know, someone saying, hey, you'd be good at this.
Yeah.
And then how you got started being like one of the only instrumental artists, on that.
Yeah. Noise Train.
Right. Okay. Yeah. For me, it was Elance and Upwork, and I became a top 10 in the world freelancer.
Yes.
I was doing Amazon. So I was top 10 in the world in marketing, but the only one in the top 10 that was doing Amazon.
Wow.
So if someone was looking, there's not a lot of us to go around. You know, and that's really where my business blew up. And because there wasn't Amazon, there wasn't a template to follow. That was the hard part. That's been for me is like, am I a marketing agency? Am I an ad agency? Am I a consultant? Am I like, what model do I look to as my kind of roadmap?
Sure.
And that didn't really exist, but it started with just picking something that stood out from the crowd.
Yeah.
And then getting some success with it and then going all in on that.
Yeah. It's that thing when you don't know, you don't even know failure exists.
Right.
There's not a lot further down to go than the bottom.
And when you're getting $4 a month or something, right?
When you're already there, it doesn't matter.
So. And what people don't know is like in those early days, I mean, I was taking Amazon projects that I would charge $5,000 for now. And was maybe doing it $250.
Oh, yeah.
Like I really had no idea. It was side money for me. It was like figuring things out. I would spend tons of time on it, maybe $5 an hour at the end of it because of how long it took me.
Yeah.
I put in all those hours and I, you know, ate that dirt, so to speak, in regards to like, you know, I think a lot of like creators now are looking at like maybe what someone like you charges or what a videographer charges or a good photographer, and they're trying to be in line with that. And I'm like,
oh yeah,
you need to be so busy because you're not charging enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're just, you know, until you're actually good enough.
Yeah.
and just eat that dirt. And I just want to take a segment there to be like, you know, from all the guys I know, that's what's required. Mm-hmm. And people get frustrated when they're not landing those $2,000 a month clients or those $2,000 photo shoots. And I'm like, well, why don't you do it for, you know, $50 and figure it out, you know?
Yeah. The industry that I'm like mostly a part of, because like, I think Utah's got like 200,000 monthly listeners. We're doing just fine. You know what I'm saying? YC's got like 10,000. And for that genre, that's fantastic. You know what I mean? So I'm doing all right, but I'm still open-minded to a quantity of work, if that makes sense. I'm still open-minded to there's an availability. And so the thing about that is, with splitting my time between obviously like streaming and I produce records for other artists, and which actually that's a point out. Let me get into that in a second. You made me think I'm thinking of something, but the thing about what I do is it's actually technically considered micro licensing. And so, you know, licensing up until like a decade ago was like, you wanted a Mumford and Sons track. You went to Warner and you said, hey, we want Mumford and Sons for this American Express ad. And they're like, cool, that'll be $400,000. And they're like, all right, sounds good. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's these brands, I can't even think of their names off the top of my head. It's like Audio Jungle or something like that. That what they did is they just, it's probably just a couple guys in a bedroom wrote really shitty sounding sync licensing music. You know, we've all heard it. It's like the boom clap with banjo or something. And they said, okay, well, you can buy this for $100. And they started realizing there's, you know, 100,000 people that need a song, and we could charge 100,000 people $100, you know? So they picked up all those small jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of availability in these young people. And I think you caught this and ran with it. I think I caught this and ran with it. That time is a non-renewable resource. You can make more money, but you can't make more time. And so which is better? Wait, not having a shoot, we were kind of comparing it to photo, not having a shoot or something for 6 weeks, but you have a $4,000 shoot, or doing 20 shoots for $500 over those 6 weeks. Which would you rather have? You know what I mean? I know which one I would rather have. And what's crazy is you'll get better from the $4,000 shoot, but you're going to get way better from 20 shoots at $500.
And when you know that school isn't really where you learn, then you look at that time that you're investing in the 20 shoots as your school. You start to see it differently. Instead of it being like a world of suck of like, oh my God, I have these 20 shoots to do. It's like, I get to work with this model and I get to work with this photographer, and on this shoot, I get to go to this location, and I'm getting to work with these props that I've never worked with on this shoot. Yep. And so every single one of them brings a lesson with it. Yep. And as you compile those, you actually become an expert.
And let's say you're actually a decent human being, and you start to realize everything we do is a people business.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say five of those 20 clients tell their other friends. You went from 20 to 25 clients. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to hoping one client that paid you $4,000.
And in the agency world too, they have terms for it, and forgive me for not knowing them, but it's essentially where, you know, you have two massive clients, and if something happens to those, cool, that's supporting your whole thing. But if something happens to those, you're SOL.
Oh, right? Dude, absolutely.
Versus if you diversify and have 20 small clients, sure, it's more work to manage them. It's more work to talk to them. Yeah. You know, we all wish we were doing a $4,000 shoot.
Sure.
But at the same time, that's why my business is still here. Because as brands come and go, I don't have any of these massive brands that, you know, my entire livelihood is dependent upon. And it gives you a little bit more leverage as well as a creator.
My dear friend Jordan Christ is an extremely... need at least three legs. It's like, all right, so you have two massive clients, table tips over, you know what I mean? And so like, why not give yourself 1,000 legs, so if one leg breaks, you're like, well, I'll be all right, you know? It's it hurts a lot less to lose $1,000 client than to lose, you know. Now, we're talking about a small business here. We're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about something scale like what you're doing where, like, you know, by now you've got huge clients and it's amazing, but you started with $250 clients. You know?
And that's where I try to, like, my Instagram, my content, everything is about just trying to show what it really takes, what it really takes. So if anyone's looking to be inspired or anyone's looking to follow along with someone or have a mentor, whether it's digital or not, because for me, that's how it's been. This is what it really takes. And I like to be real with people. And
you do a good job.
Set that perspective, set that expectation. It's very attainable for everyone.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people aren't willing or know what's really required to get there. For us, we toured, so everything was up from there.
Everything. You know,
I think one thing that's really cool, you're not touring now, are you?
No, huh?
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure that was said. So then, you know, you're in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating for brands and projects probably worldwide, nationwide, worldwide.
Worldwide, for sure.
Worldwide, I love that. And he's doing it from his home office. And
well, I actually, as of August of last year, we're sitting in my first studio.
Okay.
It's not in my home. Yeah, bro.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that. I was in my home during COVID. Now I was back at the house. But
well, we were talking earlier about having me out for lunch. So I really want to see the studio.
You're going to see it. It's going to be great.
But my point is being growing a business where you're creating music, you're doing what you love, doing it in a new way by going into a new space and learning as you go, sometimes signing with the wrong partner or the, you know, I've done that. I could talk stories for all day. Like, you know, last year I signed with a fractional CFO that really, that company was a bad relationship for me.
Sure.
And it took me a lot of like cleanup, but I learned in the process, you know, and like that's part of it too. But you don't just end up where you've got like multiple successful projects. You're like creating albums for other people. You're licensing. You don't just end up there.
Sure.
You know, and it's not always like, hey, this producer is going to bring you in as an intern and teach you everything. And like, no, you were doing a band, you were doing this, you were doing that, you're giving lessons. And it's all those things coming together to end up where you're like, I found my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You said something earlier that, and I don't even know if I fully answered it. So maybe I'll answer it right now is you're talking about, you know, what about the guy or the girl who's at home and they really want to be a hip hop artist. They really want to make a living in music. And you said maybe they land a job teaching or maybe they, you know, get into education or something. And I can't remember who said this and I'm going to misquote it. This is not going to be factual, but there's something like 600 checks that are available in the music industry, like 600 things you can do to make money. It's probably actually more than that now, especially with streaming and stuff. But like, when I really think about it, like, in my head, when I go to work, I am technically speaking, I am a business owner. I'm a studio owner, if you think about it like that. You know, I have a space that sometimes people rent for me. So I'm a studio owner. People can pay me for that. I'm a mix engineer, so I'll mix records for people. I don't master records because I have such a good mastering engineer. There's no point. I send everybody to him. I'm a songwriter. I'm a bass player. I'm a guitar player. I'm a piano player. Those are all different checks. I'm a composer. That's a check. I'm in music licensing. That's a check. I am a remix artist. That's a check. Like these are all in the last year things I have technically been paid to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of checks in music. So you tell me, oh, you want to be a rapper? Okay, that's great. That's one check. I hope you get to do it. You want to be a songwriter? That's awesome. Like, you know, write 1,000 songs. Like, I don't know, write 100 songs. Like, that's one check. But like, you know, as well as anybody, that when you own a business, it's, yeah, we do that. You know what I mean? Yeah, we do that. And if you don't know how to do it, you get online. You call your friend who does it. It doesn't matter. You figure it out. Like, because I do that too. You know, so like I edited a podcast for 3 years straight on the abolition. Dude, I mean, at this point, my music is soft ads. Like, I don't know, it's saying I have issues. Okay. It's on all these ads, but I remember this company came to me and was like, can we basically pay you to record all of our podcasts. You just sit in and produce them. And I'm like, of course, I'll do that.
Sure. That's a reoccurring check that I need that gives me some stability to do the other things I want to do.
It was always 2 hours once a week. And I did it for 3 years. And like, sure, that day, it's like I've been paid more to do other things, but I didn't have anything on that Tuesday. And I just learned a ton about a very real thing that goes on in our world that last time I checked, I never would have learned about. So it made some relationships. Actually, that same thing paid me to score the title sequence to they did a big film that was on Netflix. It's like, you know what I mean? I just said yes to a podcast and the next thing you know, I'm scoring stuff. But
yeah, you never know. And it's
you never know.
If you're pursuing that, if you're pursuing with, you know, crazy amount of ambition and relentlessness, you're chasing that. I don't want to say like gold at the end of the rainbow. That's not what I'm chasing, you know?
No,
but if you're chasing your passion, if you're chasing, that thing you're looking for in life and you're in alignment, it's crazy. Sure. What comes to you.
It's good.
And I can legitimately trace back, like just landing a client maybe two weeks ago to stuff I did 3 years before.
Wow.
Like between the relationship that referred it to the things I got to get that relationship to the things I did in those 18 months to build that brand that made me want to refer me to that person.
Yeah.
But then like the relationship I went 2 years before to go to a conference to meet that person that then introduced me to that brand, you know, and it's like, it really is the compounded interest of hustle and hard work. And it's saying yes to things. Like the thing that first got me onto Amazon was I was going through a divorce and I had a lot of time on my hands. I didn't have a lot of hobbies going on. I had had a small circle of friends because I had been gone. And I was reading some financial blogs on how to get, you know, ahead of your finance and things like that. And it was the number one thing, I've repeated this for years, was the blog said, I wish I could give it credit, but I can't remember. It was just like a random blog.
Sure. You know?
But it was a blog that said, instead of picking up a side hustle like bartending or something like that to help me get ahead on the weekends or weeknights, like I knew how to do and had been doing for 6 years, you know, bartending while touring and things like that, was find a side job that also teaches you something in the career that you're pursuing.
That's amazing.
Right. And so it was like, okay, so now I don't have to think of it as just like a side job where the end result is the money that I'm then using to do something with.
Mm-hmm. It's
a side job that takes my time, that's teaching me something, that also mm-hmm. gives me money.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's amazing.
That was how I started freelancing on Elance and Upwork, because I was an e-commerce manager by day. And then I was like freelancing on this Amazon or affiliate marketing or stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then that turned into my thing that's given me financial freedom and everything else, you know? And so for those people thinking of, you know, you talked about all the different things you're doing around music. Don't get too pigeonholed into one thing.
Yeah.
And you look at all the actors like Drake, and he's a huge one, you know, that we saw as an actor first, and now, now he's a hip hop artist and all kinds of things, but that happens all the time across lots of artists. And we're so surprised when we see them like act after they've been a singer or something like that. And it's like, no, these people know the game. They know the industry. They know all the ways to get those checks. And they might have found one thing at first, that first opportunity.
Sure.
But it might actually be the fifth or sixth opportunity that's actually their thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. You know? Yeah, I've always respected, like, and I say this to, sometimes I say this to my clients, like, I'm going to do this whether you're doing it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need your permission to do this. I don't need your check. Like, I'm going to come to the studio tomorrow, check or no check. And mm-hmm. I love that. Like, you were talking about, I totally forgot you were bartending. But how amazing. Like, you did all that. Like bartended, worked at, you know, down in Grandview for that company.
US toy company.
Yes, dude.
Worked at UPS. You remember me working at
Marist Casino? Yes, like, dude. Like, all those things. And I think I really admire, it's kind of silly because it's from a book on marriage. Stanley talks about it, you know, like, and I think it's actually just good relationship, like friendship. It's just good advice. And so I'll give him credit for it. But like he said, like, if you're driving 70 miles an hour down the highway it's like really hard to lock eyes with someone going 70 miles an hour the other way. You break your neck doing that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like he said, oftentimes your wife is, or husband, if you know, whatever, is often someone that when you're on the highway, every time you look over to change lanes, oh, there's that car. Oh, you know, there they are. They're still there. And I think the thing that I love about you is every time I look up, you don't need permission. You're still doing your thing. You're still growing this business. And I've watched you in seasons where you're like navigating COVID going, all right, what do I do with this? And then I've seen you in seasons where like you're literally going 150 miles down the highway. You can't, like, you know, you have so many clients, and it's like, I'm trying to take note of that, of these guys, you know, Kansas City or not, I love this city. Mm-hmm. But like, I want to love it so much regardless of where I am doing it or how much I'm doing it for. I'm trying to take note of who do I keep seeing when I look up? Who are the guys and girls that every time I look up, they were doing it, whether they had a cool Instagram post to tell everybody about, or whether they had a big check or not, they're still going to go to work. And it seems like with you, because you now work with a lot of people I know, it's amazing that your character seems to continue, that they just know Andy, or some people call you Andrew, he's just going to outwork you. Like, he's just, you know, he's going to do his thing. But at the same time, you're also going to freaking fly to Bali and sit on the beach for 2 weeks. Like, yeah, I love it. I love it. I think it's amazing.
Some people find balance in the day to day.
Sure.
And
sure.
For me, it's balance in spurts.
Good for you.
So it's like obsession, or like, you know, hard work, put your head down and grind and push the plow. And then as soon as you get that chance to clear skies, like, take advantage of it and be in that moment.
I love it.
You know, people can find balance in different ways.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, we started this before we went on air talking about scaling.
Mm-hmm.
And coming by the studio and talking to some of the guys and, you know, just sharing some tips on processes and scope of work, and how do you like outline that with clients, and how do you communicate well and all those things. And for me, the real hard work, 150 mile an hour on the highway times are those scaling times.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's typically like a growth mode followed by a lean mode, a growth mode followed by a lean mode.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Not because it's just up and down. It's just that I can't always be in a growth mode.
There's rhythm. You need rhythm.
Mm-hmm. So it's like it's head down to the plow, crazy hard work, work hard. And yeah, I know there's that hustle, that negative look to hustle culture, but like it's required to win. Let's be honest. And then when you get a chance, you have to also know how to disconnect. You have to also know what is it that makes you feel like you can stop thinking about work and reset your eyes on the vision and the goals. And
yeah,
I've told a story on this podcast before, Zane, but I was going through a tough time in 2019 toward the end, because I was accomplishing a lot of goals. I was having some financial cash flow issues, honestly, because of that fractional CFO.
Sure.
That I like hadn't created myself, but kind of got made, and I hadn't had cash flow issues in a long time. So I'm like, what the heck? And I'm also accomplishing these goals. And it was like, I didn't have this relentless drive anymore. That was just natural. I just wake up with it. It's not like created, you know, it's just in me. So it's not something I'm like proud of, because it's just Andrew, you know, but it was gone for a little while. And I was just really like, what is going on? I just had, you know, I retired my mom. I got her a house. I have this Jeep that like I could never have imagined having, which is
Jeep. Materialistic
maybe, but like it just, I would have never dreamed having that vehicle. And just these little things like that. And I was just like, well, I'm not really chasing more money. So like, what's my motivation?
Sure.
Right. And I just lost it for a while. And I actually went to New York. I went to New York for a week by myself. I went to instrumental metal show, Polyphia.
Dude,
and,
yes.
I just danced my face off, and I was by myself. Like, honestly, just like danced my face off, little East Coast metal scene.
This
was pre-COVID, everybody. Right?
Yeah. Respect.
Or whatever, right?
Sure.
And And I just like came to realization with just like, actually, I just love the process of what I'm doing. And I set my sights on a new goal and just was reminded kind of, you know, the why you know, decompressed and really just like took a big deep breath. And those are what those trips do for me.
Yeah, I love that.
So it's a mixture of like a travel with some music and just like, you know, letting emotion go. And I got recentered.
I love that.
You know, I think a lot of founders already know this, people listening, things like that, but everybody has their own rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has their own rhythm.
So good, and dude.
Comparison is the worst thing. That's always been enemy. It's always been my biggest enemy.
Mm-hmm. It's biggest enemy, dude. Like, it is insane. Because there's always going to be somebody who's doing more than you're doing, but they're not you.
You don't know all the variables that, like, that's what we generalize. That's our, mm-hmm. that's a huge weakness that we all do, you know, and we generalize and we say entrepreneurs, that's a huge generalization because there's all types, you know, and we say we compare and, but you don't know what their childhood was like, their upbringing was like, their financial situation was like, the climate of the economy during that time. You don't know who their girlfriend was, their boyfriend was at that time. You don't know who their mother-in-law was. You don't know what was happening with their kids. You don't know what was happening. Like, there's so many things, and to be able to compare without knowing all of those things, honestly, unintelligent.
Yeah, well, that's why it's important to define success.
Exactly.
Because who gives a crap? Who cares what everybody else is doing? Are you successful? It's like you said, even like the Jeep thing. Like, yeah, okay, so it's a Jeep, but what if that's like a, what if that's like a bit of a like trophy on the wall for you to go, dude, I don't work for this Jeep. This is a Jeep that reminded me of Red Robin. It reminded me of US Toy. It reminds me of blam, bam, 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 bam. You know, whatever. You know, like,
we both drove beaters.
Let's dude, I got married. I got married and still didn't have a car with air conditioning.
Hmm.
And I remember my friends like gave me hell. Because I went and bought an Audi. Doesn't matter. It was like not like a new Audi. It was, I'm still fiscally responsible.
Don't justify it.
Thank you. See, we got to hang out more. I need you in my life. But like, yeah, dude, like I bought this Audi and people were like, whoa, Mr. Hotshot. I was like, no, dude, like I worked a lot of years and did a lot of things. And I always thought like, I've loved cars since I was a kid and I used to feel bad for it. Like when I became an adult, I was like, I don't want to love material stuff. And it's like, I don't love material. I honestly am inspired by creative work. There's something about the body lines on a 1990 Mercedes 300E that are inspiring. Like, you know what I mean? Like before Instagram posts and lighting and all that stuff, like there's a designer that sat down and made that thing. And it, same with your Jeep. Like there's something about the way the light hits it at a certain time of day and there's just enough mud on the tires. And you know what I mean? And it's the way like you get the worn-in spot from the way it sits up high and you have to hit the seat every time you get in. I'm making it romantic. I know I am, but like, I don't care. Like, I think it's awesome. So
I'm with you too. And I honestly was like, I've been feeling guilty. I've had it now for a year and a half. I felt guilty that I liked it so much.
Sure.
I'm really not materialistic either. Yeah. I don't like to think that I am, but I think it's a mixture of like, this was a thing that one, you got rid of your other car because you helped someone out with it.
Yeah.
And I used to have cars that the windows didn't roll down and the doors didn't shut right. And I had to crawl out the passenger side or open my door at the drive through or sweat on my way to work because I didn't have AC. Or I remember the first time I got the car I gave away and I was so thankful that it started and I could get to Grandview and back like without having to worry about it starting. So it's just been this, it's like a reminder, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, in the Bible, you know, I know you have faith as well. And in the Bible, you know, they cross the River Jordan in one of those Bible stories. And like God told the people at the time to make an altar of stones to remind them, you know, of the accomplishment of the miracle of the blessing. And I kind of relate it to that. You know, it feels like this thing that's just like, hey, this reminds me of Africa. It looks tactical. It's cool. It feels like Andrew when I'm in it. It aligns with my energy. And it's a reminder of everything I've worked for. And saying that just to be like,
yeah,
you can't, that Jeep compared to like what other people have done or what they have, or, you know, it's nothing in the grand scheme of things. But when it's just about you and not what everyone else perceives it as, you know, I know we went down a little bit of a rabbit trail to anyone listening, but I think the stuff, the mindset stuff, is honestly as important as the technical stuff. And
for anyone with
young, comparing is the worst.
It's the worst. I'm a big advocate for counseling, big time advocate for counseling. Like, so much, in fact, that like, well, part of like what the, we do as the counselors is like, we always want to be generous. I think the world of generous gets larger and larger. And I honestly believe in helping people because there's enough to go around, you know what I mean? And so, but odd to say, I love counseling, go to counseling. I had a counselor one time tell me, she was like, I feel like you get like decision paralysis. Cause I was always scared of making the wrong decision. I was so mentally in my head. And I remember I had my friend paint me a hand letter, a thing that says it's just a decision. And it's literally still in our guest room. And I honestly need to probably bring it to the studio because I make literally 10,000 tiny decisions a day that ultimately end up becoming a song. And like, it's just a decision. And you want, I don't know. I think about so much of what we do, and the hurdle of our mental is just, it's just really important. And I was telling my wife, I was like, I want to have something to bring Andy on this podcast, just like a thought I would love his thoughts on. And like, I was like, he's going to have questions for me. I know that. He's going to have awesome stuff to say. I know that. But literally the thing you're saying, like the mental, like you can have all the skill, and if you lack that mental, what I don't even know what you'd call it, you're not going to go anywhere. And I told my wife, I had this thought last night as I was thinking about this podcast with you. And I thought, the best meal in Kansas City is probably not made at a restaurant. And I say that because the best cook in this entire city probably doesn't own a restaurant, because they never gave themselves permission to.
Wow.
Or they didn't believe they could do it. Or their dad told them they couldn't do it. Or even worse, their dad or mom said, you need a backup plan in case that doesn't work out. And they, maybe they did cook for a little bit, and they, you know, whatever. And it just got me thinking, like, it's not always the best chef that runs the best restaurant.
Mm-mm.
It's the person who's like, I could do this, I can do it. And they just don't quit. So I've been thinking about that a lot lately, because like, dude, I am by all standards a okay guitar player, but like, I'm just ignorant or something enough to keep showing up here every day, willing to do it, you know, or whatever. And so your industry is obviously a little, little different, because it really is something that requires a lot of information and knowledge about tech and systems and back end. But I do think about creativity that way. Like, the most creative people in the world probably never even gave themselves permission to do it. It's not like sports where, like, if you're in the ninth grade, you run a 4.440, your gym teacher is going to call everyone he knows and go, hey, Brian ran a 4.440, and they're all going to come scout you. Like, you don't make the most bomb ass mac and cheese and all of a sudden Rieger's calling you. And it's like, we want you, baby. We heard about your mac and cheese. It doesn't work like that. Like,
no,
you have to get out there and do it, you know? And I don't know. I was thinking about them.
You know, this kind of stuff to me is the gold. And if you guys like hearing entrepreneurs, this is a good spot for my sponsor. But if you guys like hearing from entrepreneurs, live feedback, they ask, you know, you can ask questions and get feedback after after these classes and these courses on Global Entrepreneur Week. It's really, really helpful. I remember I run Amazon classes almost every year, storytelling classes. Remember, guys, if you're in Kansas City, it's November 17th through the 19th. You know, it features hours of programming, networking. It's going to be interactive and virtual this year. So as someone that's ran a few virtual events and conferences and booths, it's a little bit different. We're not getting to all hang out and see each other, but it can also be a little bit easier to make some of the classes. And, you know, you can say, hey, I would love to have a contact or a coffee, or just make that ask in those rooms. So once again, Global Entrepreneur Week, prime time, November 17th through the 19th. Please sign up and get it on your agenda. Zane, I want to talk about, I want to like take the next segment and talk about, you know, some of the things that you're six and a half years in. I'm about to close up on 6 years with Markology. But I've been freelancing. Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the industry. I chose Amazon because of how Wild West it was. I liked that there wasn't a lot of people to tell me what to do. And sure. I realized this about myself. Like, why was I in detention in high school all the time? Telling myself a little bit. Why was I in, honestly, fights all the time? I moved from Congo to Kansas City at 16. I had never had to ask to go to the restroom or, like, they didn't like my ball cap that said KC because it was blue and it was, like, a gang cap or something at Liberty. Can you imagine, like, being 16 years old, never having to ask to go to the restroom and then, like,
sure.
someone being able to tell you no?
Sure.
Like, nah, I'm going to the bathroom. Like, you know, I would just get into trouble. And you're talking about that asking for permission thing. And I'm just saying that at a younger age, it was trouble for me. Mm. At an older age, it's been an awesome thing.
Yes.
That, you know, that I didn't necessarily need permission. And my dad taught me that.
That's great.
And he was also someone that said, no, get an internship. No, don't be in a band. No, this isn't your thing.
Sure.
Okay. But by watching him, he was pioneering, you know, things that he didn't get permission for. He just went and did them.
It's great.
And one thing that's super important about your circle, and I promise I have a point in this, but like one thing that's super important about your circle is if you hang around people that are confident, mm-hmm. that say like, hey, I'm the best cook in KC, I'm gonna let people know. If you hang around people that have an abundance mindset, a win-win mindset, if you hang around people that aren't negative about counseling or therapy, right? Mm-hmm. If you hang around people that have an open mind, if you hang around people that work hard, they create room for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's one of the things that people are like, oh, you're the sum of your circle. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What it means is if your friend is confident and isn't insecure, and you know they're in your life for a reason because you're choosing, you know, who's around you. If they're confident and not insecure, it doesn't mean that you can't be confident. It means that they're creating room for you to then be confident.
That's cool.
In the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I've really noticed is and I'm thankful for. Like I have great friends that allow me to change and allow me to say crazy things and allow me to try crazy things and try crazy outfits or a nice dress hat in Kansas City or like you do things around here and people are like, what are you doing?
I know.
But you know, I have friends that regardless of what they think or, you know, they create room for me to do that.
That's awesome.
And and that's super, super, super important for someone that's trying to do something different than maybe what they've done before, trying to change and have a circle of friends. Just evaluate that constantly. And if people, you can start that by creating that room for others. But pay attention if the people you're around on a daily basis are creating that room for you.
That's really good.
It's really important.
It's so important.
So my question for you, after saying that and really thinking about, you said, you know, creating that space is in your six and a half going on 7 years, you know, what are you focusing on? Personally or business? I'd rather hear business, but I think they're both related.
Yeah, that's great.
What's something that you're focusing on for an area of growth or something that you see next for your business? Like, I want to get really good at, you know, producing, or I really want to work on my systems, or Leslie, like, in your 6 year, what are you focusing on? I think that insight can be really, you know, enlightening.
I appreciate that. I'd like to get better at business. This is a business at the end of the day. I am technically the product, but I'd like to get better at business. I'm want to learn more about like tax code, because at the end of the day, I don't think a lot of people in the music industry spend a lot of time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of places you can go in music without having an education in taxes and business ownership and all that stuff. But I think the places I want to go, I think I need it. I want to help more people get into the music industry.
Similar to launching a brand on Amazon for someone.
Like exactly.
Helping someone get their stuff together to be in the industry.
Being able to know the ins and outs of the music industry is fine, but it changes a whole lot. The tax code changes a whole lot. A lot of things just change. And so you have to stay, you have to kind of stay ready. Like the book, and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
it's like exercise or whatever, you know, if you stop exercising, like you can't coast off the bench press you did 2 years ago, you know? So like, so that's one thing. There's always an underlining, unicorn of tone. I don't know how in depth to go on this, but like, of like achieving a sonic fidelity that I'm always chasing. I love the intricacies of making things sound incredible. So I don't think it'll ever stop. Like, I'm obsessively buying equipment and selling equipment all the time, chasing like sound and things, you know, I don't know, like I have like a 12 space rack in my desk filled with, you know, lots of nerdy things for music. And like just switching stuff out, or like, you know, adding stereo SSL EQ, or, you know, I've tried numerous different compressors. It's just like, I always want to grow and learn more about that stuff.
You're an A-B tester. You're an A-B tester.
Like, an A-B tester?
Yeah, there's a book called The Originals that's real popular, and it just talks about the different types of creators and innovators. And I'm an A-B tester as well.
Cool.
Meaning I don't come up with just a genius idea like from scratch. It more creates itself over time by all the things that I've tried coming together.
Yes.
Pedals, or if you're building a perfect pedal board. In my business, I call it the Marknology effect.
Okay. There you go.
And that's it's managing Amazon, but with my systems and my strategy and the softwares that I've tried that I think are useful, and all the ways that we use them combined into something we call the effect.
I love that. Yeah. To me, it's like a stacking of information. Like, you know, I have this synthesizer that's made in 1982. It's called a Roland Juno 60. And if you watch television, you've probably watched Stranger Things. And Stranger Things intro is this really cool synthesizer, and it's played on a Juno 60. So a few years ago, I bought this synth for like $1,000. And I was like, I'm going to learn this thing. Stranger Things comes out, and synth people everywhere are like, I've got to have a Juno 60. You can't get a Juno 60 for like $3,000 now. It's insane. But like, I purely just wanted to learn synthesis. So I bought this thing, not even knowing that it was going to be like the thing everybody was going to want to have and want to learn. And so I'm always just kind of chasing stuff like that. It's A-B testing, stacking on what I already know. And so now it's like, you can't see it, but there's like a wall of synthesizers like right here. And I have some that aren't even here. Like I want to stack on the information I have. I want to improve on what I've learned. I have an intern for the first time. I've always had students at the studio that I've worked at that are there for like a 3 month long apprenticeship, but I have a proper intern now, and he's awesome. And it's my first time for that. I actually told my wife, I thought that was my greatest accomplishment, that like some kid paying to go to college wants to learn from me how to do music, when like we could sit down and write a book about college, you know.
Super like humbling. It's super humbling.
What we think, but like, oh, I literally like it's thing. And so I want to steward that way. And to be completely honest with you, I'm asking myself the question, because 6 years ago, really like 8 years ago, I was like, six or so years, I took the leap and was like, you know, no turning back. But I look at what, you know, I would credit to God, you know, some people, you know, it's a combination, right? Faith without works is dead. So there's a lot of hard work I've done, but I'm not qualified for the things that have come my way. So I can't sit here and be just so good that everybody hires me. I'm not even going to pretend to do that. That being said, I look at where I started to where I am right now in 6 years. So at 38 years old, and 6 years from now, I'll be 38. I'll be almost 39 years old. What will I wish at 32 that I sat down and I started? What will 40-year-old Zane be going, thank God at 32 I started doing that?
Wow.
And off air, I have a couple ideas that I would actually love to talk to you about, because
probably the answer is therapy.
Dude. I already tell all my friends, I'm like, I for real am going to put like $1,000 in like a CD or in like some sort of like penny stock hedge fund type crap for my daughter, because it's inevitable. Between me and the world, she doesn't need to talk to somebody about all this stuff. But yeah, so like what's interesting is that my wife and I have a couple nonprofit ideas for therapy that like We want to find ways to take therapy into rural communities. My war vet, and he lives in a town of two in that town. If he wants to go to counseling, he's got to go, you know, or the farmer down the street who maybe just lost his mom, they're going to have to drive to Salina an hour to get counseling. So like a dream of my wife and I's is to create an opportunity, partner with local schools that aren't in session on Saturdays and say, hey, give us four classrooms, find four counselors from Salina or some town. Say they're all going to meet in this small town at this high school. They're taking bookings from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and they can see 45 people once a month for hopefully free, but like the nonprofit could essentially pay those counselors to go do that. How amazing would that be?
Or virtual. Like
that, yeah, or virtual, which, dude, thank you, COVID. You gave us all permission to do that. But there is something of an in-person element for some of these people. I just think, see, this is why I love talking to you. You already gave me a great idea. But all that to say, like, that's an idea. But I'm just trying to think of, like, what are the things I want to do right now? Because if I think about it, yeah, there's, like, 20 legs on my table. But there aren't. There are because I have small checks. But, like, is it possible that in 6 years or 7 years, this thing could pay me $100,000 a year? This thing could pay me $25,000 a year. This thing could pay me $50,000 a year. And then behind the scenes, that guy's earning $50,000 from working for me. That guy earned $100,000 from working with me. Those are the things I'm thinking about. That in what am I doing now so that by 40, you know, I've created the space for 10 people to make their living in the music industry.
And the only way you're going to have that perception, to that awareness, to know that, Zane, like, what am I going to do now to build a legacy or that's mm-hmm. going to impact me when I'm 40 is mm-hmm. by putting 6.5 years in. And now you can Amen. See what 6.5 years can Amen. Do. And you think of it as I like, man, it. That's not even that long. You know,
it's not. It's not.
And one other thing I wanted to put my hat on was like, talked about having an intern and how the music industry is ever changing and you got to like constantly be in it and learning.
Yeah.
That was something I learned as a consultant and mm-hmm. why I changed. I could be living on an island in Bali working with like four clients and making 150 grand a year like these Amazon gurus on YouTube. That sure. wasn't my plan. That wasn't my yeah. like, you know, my goal was to, I wanted to actually be an expert and to continue to maintain that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do everything that has to do with Amazon. I like doing certain things like strategy and advertising and different things, but there's sure. a whole lot that goes into it. I need to build yeah. a team. And so yeah. I've been building a team that with our combined knowledge, we stay up to date on everything that's changing every single day.
I love it.
Because I just couldn't do it on my own. So it's like yeah. taking, you know, as far as salary goes and investments and time and challenges, sure, it's way harder to have a team. But when I knew what I wanted my end goal to be, it then created my decisions happening in the day to day. And I've told people this, you know, as long as I've been doing this, that to me, being a good leader, being a CEO, being a founder, being an entrepreneur, my job description is every single day is making decisions and making decisions mm-hmm. and reprioritizing what I need to work on
yeah.
every single day. And I do a whole lot of things to make decision making easier. Whether it's logic-based decisions, whether it's making sure my yep. I'm in alignment, my heart, my soul, so that I can trust my gut. I spend a whole lot of my time improving sure. the areas that help me around decision-making and prioritizing. That's what I focus on to get the most out of, you know, my time, what I think my actual job description is as a leader of a company. Anyway, I know we've gone a little bit long, Zane. I think everything you said there is absolute gold, and I know you're stressed about getting on today. I really appreciate you sharing your story, and just letting us know, like, you know, what's the path to, you know, being a musician in 2020, going from a band to having, you know, multiple successful projects and getting 20 legs on a table. All super huge. I know it's not the last time I'll have you on, but it sure is the first time. Everybody listening, once again, shout out to our sponsor, Global Entrepreneur Week. Remember, it's November 17th through the 19th here in Kansas City for the Prime Days, but it's actually 16th through the 20th for the whole event. Global Entrepreneur Week, Global Entrepreneur Week KC is here in Kansas City. But I know that anyone else listening, maybe look it up in your city. Your city might have something going on around a similar time as well. I know that I've gotten flyers and invites from different cities. So go there, sign up. You can schedule your events. Everything's virtual this year, which honestly might be a huge win because last year they had us all over the city. So I'm pumped that I'm going to be able to make it to all the classes that I want to. And really be able to participate and give back to the city. Zane, thanks for being on the show. Let's connect about that lunch.
Dude, I love you. Dude, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I was cutting out there at the end, so I was trying to manage it. But, dude, thank you so much. Love you, support you. Stoked to chat again.
Yes, sir.
Dude, be well, man.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io. Helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.